Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, and happy Friday. This is the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, and every last one of them deals with the passage in the House of the American Health Care Act. And Jim, we'll get to all of that in just a moment. I think both of us are fairly relieved, you especially, at the NFL reports out there that Jay Cutler has been auditioning for a color analyst spot with Fox Sports rather than negotiating with the New York Jets. So if his broadcasting career, if he actually gets one, is anything like his playing career, he'll goof up early in the first quarter and then just pout the rest of the game.
Oh, pretty good, Greg. I was waiting for you to say, and that's the latest here from Chicago. Let's pitch it back to the studio. Oh, it's been intercepted. He's transferred to another network. Oh, yeah. I don't get a lot of chances to gloat over you, Greg, but it looks like the Jets had the option of looking at Cutler and said no.
Yes.
Now, Josh McCown, it's not a dramatic improvement. Some will even say worse. But we did manage to sit. We looked at Cutler and we said no. And that's, I'm proud of you, Jets. A lot of based on your history, I wouldn't have bet you would do that.
Hey, Josh McCown might be better than Jay Cutler. He replaced Jay Cutler one season and got him to the brink of the playoffs just in time for Jay Cutler to get healthy and come back. And the Packers beat us in the last minute of the game to win the division. So it might not be as bad as you think. At least if you can
Josh
protect
him. Josh McCown has minutes and minutes of accomplishment in his long NFL career.
Not saying it's ideal. I'm just saying it might be better, and it's certainly cheaper. All right, let's move on to today's actual martinis, starting with the good. Jim, there's been a lot of debate, of course, over what is in the American Health Care Act. Conservatives mostly, certainly in the House Freedom Caucus, balking at the original version. Then there was a manager's amendment that they still didn't like. Ultimately, Paul Ryan had to pull the bill late March. Then Mike Pence rolled up his sleeves, negotiated with the conservatives, got the MacArthur-Meadows Amendment, which essentially gives the states a lot more flexibility to define plans. Now they're talking about risk pools to help cover the costs of those with pre-existing conditions. So the premiums and deductibles should theoretically go down, taking care of the mandates and taxes and so forth. So while it's not full repeal, and you're certainly still hearing some grousing about that, it did pass 217 to 213. It's a substantially better bill than it was back in March. We'll get to the hurdles that still exist in just a moment. But for a GOP that looked to be rudderless there for a few weeks, it looks like they've at least accomplished one major step in this process.
I agree, Greg. And I think a really interesting factor in the coming days and weeks will be how do rank and file Republicans at the grassroots feel about this? Because looking at all the stuff that it does, they should be pretty happy. Maybe not ecstatic. Maybe this isn't the perfect bill. Maybe this isn't everything they want. Because of it, this is still the same formula and problems they have of earlier, that certain ideas that conservatives like a lot, like tort reform and insurance companies selling across state lines, that still has to wait. But having said that, I kind of tried to go through this in the morning jolt, and Lord knows this bill does a lot. Individual mandate is gone. Right. Republicans have complained about that, filed a big Supreme Court suit. We believe the government it's not the government's job to make you purchase something. No matter how good it is for you, the government should not be levying a special tax on you because you didn't buy something. Well, that's gone. Having said that, the individual mandate was always there for a reason, because you need to get young, healthy people buying health insurance in order to fund all the care that's needed for the old and sick people. Well, right now what they have is the consequence. If you don't buy insurance and you let it lapse and you end up needing it later, the insurance company can charge you about 30% more if you let it lapse for more than 63 days. Some people might say, well, is that really the same? Well, I kind of see one as a government mandate. I see this is more of there's a consequence to your actions. You make that choice. Some Republicans might grumble about that. Keeps adult children on their government plans. There are a bunch of free market folks who'd say, no, this is terrible. This is, even cultural folks might say this is infantilizing, young people. Look, a lot of entry-level jobs that people get when they're coming out of college or in their early 20s don't offer insurance through their employers. They don't pay enough for people to afford premiums, things like that. This was always very popular. We can argue about whether it should be popular. We can argue about whether this could be a better world, but for Republicans, this was not the hill to die on. Lots of 20-somethings will be happy, and lots of parents will be happy. This is one less thing they need to worry about. I think the single biggest and most important thing that it does is the dramatic changes it makes to Medicaid, giving states freedom. These are the sorts of things that Doug Ducey out in Arizona and Scott Walker, Republican governors, wanted this. This was important. And they say they can save a lot of money and still take care of people if they're given more flexibility from Washington's rules and regulations. I think one of the big things that Scott Walker talked about was this desire to basically tie state Medicaid programs to welfare to work programs, meaning that, yeah, we will take care of you. We will cover your health insurance. We will, with these very low copays that you have on Medicaid. We do want to take care of you, but we want to move you to a point where you have a job and that employer gives you insurance. And it'll probably give you better insurance than you get on Medicaid, because there are a lot of doctors who won't take Medicaid patients or won't take new Medicaid patients. Pete, not everybody's going to love this, but I think this is exactly the sort of a conservative, free market, small government, federalist approach to the problem that we need. That might be the single most important change that this bill makes for this. And also, very importantly, I talked in a bunch of these podcasts about the challenge of what do you do with the 10 to 11 million people who are now collecting Medicaid because they are part of the expansion that was enacted under Obamacare. If you repealed it, those people would be out of luck and have no health coverage. They have to find other ones. Well, those folks are grandfathered in. If you're among those folks who's part in one of those states that expanded Medicaid, now you got it. Great. You've got it. They can't take it away from you. You should not experience any disruption. For new applicants, well, then it's a problem. These states will not be allowed to add new people. Or if they do, they have to finance it themselves. And a lot of these states are not going to be able to pay for it themselves. So a good small government things, a limit on expansion of entitlements, and a good idea. Expanding health savings accounts, always popular. More people should have them. Repeals the Obamacare taxes. A lot to like in here. I think the other, we will talk a bit more about this in the second martini, but the areas that are allegedly harsh, that are allegedly mean, that get down to the, it's whether the subsidies are enough. And my guess is the Senate will probably attempt to dramatically expand the subsidies, which may make the bill a little less fiscally restrained, but it might be necessary for politics. The second reason is the waivers for pre-existing conditions. And the idea is that you can't really, they can't really deny you. The problem is they can charge you more. And most people would say, oh my goodness, they're going to charge me more than I can afford. Well, they created $8 billion over 5 years for states to help set up a program. Democrats say that isn't enough. The really important thing I mentioned by Avik Roy is that when in Obamacare, they set up a system. It was literally called the Pre-Existing Condition Insurance Plan, where if you can prove that you want to get insurance, but the insurance companies won't cover you because of this, you apply to this program and they would cover you with extremely, you know, heavily subsidized. And you'd end up with the total number of people who ever signed up for this program was 115,000 people. In a country of 317 million people, that's really not that much. And right. So maybe the $8 billion over 5 years will be enough to fund this program. The other thing is, it's not like the government can't go back and fund more for a program like this. So people with pre-existing conditions shouldn't suffer too much as long as this program is administered carefully and appropriately and accurately. And hey, it's not like government will ever messed up anything with healthcare, right, Greg?
Never, never, never. Yeah, yeah. So there's going to be a lot.
Great website called healthcare.gov.
So let's talk about the hurdles now as we transition to our bad martini. You mentioned that the Senate is going to probably be looking for a less conservative bill. You've already got Dean Heller of Nevada, who's going to have a tough reelection fight most likely next year, saying that he's against the current bill. Lindsey Graham says he can't make a call on this because it hasn't been scored by the CBO yet. You know Susan Collins is going to want to tweak it because this is one of the moments where she can have a great deal of influence, and she would love that. Lisa Murkowski, you know, the moderates who generally pop up and force different changes to legislation in the Senate. We've seen them do it before. Then you've got folks like Charles Krauthammer over at Fox News, not exactly jubilant yesterday because he sees the Senate and the Republicans in general playing this battle on Democratic terms.
In the end, I think Obamacare wins the day because it changed expectations. Look at the terms of the debate. Republicans are not arguing the free market anymore. They have sort of accepted the fact that the electorate sees health care as not just any commodity. It's not like purchasing a steak or a car. It's something that people now have a sense the government ought to guarantee.
That's right.
Chris Wallace sitting in for Brett Baer yesterday. He went on to say, Krautheimer did, that he thinks we're going to have single payer within 7 years. So not exactly the most rosy scenario. Jim, another major hurdle potentially. There were some reports yesterday that the House bill might not qualify to be considered under the Byrd rule, which would mean reconciliation would be off the table. I have a feeling that there will be either adjustments made or a vote on rules there to allow that in the United States Senate. But clearly, while this is an important win in the House for Republicans and people who want to see changes to Obamacare, there's a long way to go here.
Yeah, maybe it's good for everybody to go back to Schoolhouse Rock.
Oh, that's coming. Don't worry.
Picture the little happy rolled up bill saying, I'm a bill, just on Capitol Hill.
Well, as long as you went there, as long as you went there, let's just do it.
Okay. I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long day.
So that's the old Schoolhouse Rock video. And here's the relevant portion of that video.
Now I go to the House of Representatives and they vote on me.
If they vote yes, what happens?
Then I go to the Senate and the whole thing starts all over again.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes, Jim. That's where we're going.
And, you know, this is not something that's unique or special to the health care bill. This is the way it works for every bit of legislation. Basically, you know, the House passes it, then it goes to the Senate. And as somebody characterized it yesterday, right now, Mitch McConnell and Senate Republicans are looking at this bill and saying, that's nice. Yeah, we're going to make some changes. And the odds are probably likely the Senate Republicans will make significant changes to this bill. You know, and as you mentioned, the odds are good that it's going to be less conservative. I'm making air quotes as I say this, more easygoing, less sweeping changes, et cetera, et cetera. Then what really matters is it goes to conference, right? They have two different versions of a bill. You can't pass them this way. You basically take a bunch of leaders from the House, a bunch of negotiators from the House, a bunch of negotiators from the Senate get together, and they have the really difficult job of hashing out a unified version, taking both sides, attempting to take the best parts of both bills and putting them together into a new piece of legislation. Sometimes things break down in conference. Sometimes they actually cannot reach something that the conference can agree on. I think because of the importance of this, there'll be enormous pressure to get something done. But, you know, once it comes out of conference, then it gets real. But however, once it comes out of conference, then you got to go back to the House again, and then you have to go back to the Senate again. So if you're one of these House members that really had, you know, like the protection for pre-existing conditions was in there or something, or you know, the Medicaid reforms or the tax removal. At some point in this process, something that's really important to any one of these House Republicans could get taken out. And they would have a very fair reason to say, look, that's what made the bill acceptable to me. You took it out. I can't vote for it anymore. And at that point, it could die in the House. It could die in the Senate. This is the way this process works. In other words, it is still a very long road ahead. There's still a lot of ways that this can fall apart for Republicans. I think the other thing, which Krautheimer kind of acknowledges there, my colleague Kevin Williamson has a great piece. You know, it deep down, part of the problem on healthcare is that politicians always want to overpromise. They basically want to tell people, I'm going to set up a system where you can get the very best healthcare with no waiting from the best doctors and pay almost nothing for it. And that's what everybody wants, but that is what is something that is impossible to deliver. My colleague Kevin Williamson focuses on the concept of scarcity. I think the better way of putting it, Krautheimer said earlier about the idea of thinking of healthcare as a right. Well, if it's a right, then it's a right that basically gives you a right to somebody else's labor for free. Right?
Right.
Every bit of medical care that you get, from a doctor to a nurse practitioner to the person who designs and builds the MRI machine, the drug maker, every step in this process involves somebody else doing work, and they expect to be compensated, and it seems kind of fair. And what's more, they expect to be compensated well, because this is a really highly developed skill, right? If we could all be, you know, great doctors, they wouldn't charge so much. You could just go down the street or ask your neighbor to do it, or you could do it yourself. And, you know, nobody charges to apply a Band-Aid, right? This is, you know, the deep down thing is that good health care costs a lot of money. And everybody wants somebody else to pay for it. And eventually you run out of somebody else, right? They, have the government pay for it. Yes, but the government has to get it through tax revenues. And once the government starts paying for it, it begins looking at certain expenses and deciding whether they're cost effective. This is how you end up with waiting lines over in foreign countries like Britain and Canada and Australia and all these other countries. Look, some people love those systems. And if you don't need anything rare, then they're probably going to work, and you're patient, they're probably going to work out okay for you. If you do need a rare, expensive procedure, the system may cover it, the system may not. The system may put you at the back of a very long line. You know, every system is going to have trade-offs, and no politician wants to be honest about that. So my nagging fear is the Republicans will, you know, put enormous effort into passing this, and because it doesn't deliver nirvana, people will be dissatisfied and decide to punish them.
Wow. Our three martinis, given that they're all on the same subject, are kind of blending together. But, Jim, in an interesting twist yesterday, we heard even before the final vote on the House floor, obviously Republicans, once they brought the bill to the floor, were expecting to win. They had a lot of beer ready to go, and they had buses ready to go down to the White House, and they went down to the Rose Garden, and the president was there, and a lot of the relevant committee chairmen, Speaker Ryan, and big celebration down there at the White House. And we've just explained why we're a long way from the goal line. Reince Priebus was originally accused of having a bizarre football reference yesterday, but he said it was originally quoted as saying Trump punted the ball into the end zone, but ultimately it was he helped punch the ball into the end zone.
Touchback.
Touchback, yeah. But no, he actually said punch the ball into the end zone, but the ball's not in the end zone. This is a big first down. It was third and long, probably, given how this bill originally set up. And now the Republicans have a fresh set of downs, and perhaps they're across the 50-yard line here, but they still have the Senate and the conference to go. So what did you make of the major celebration yesterday at the White House?
Well, we should point out that the allegation of beer came from Alexandria Jaffe, who's a reporter on Capitol Hill. Later, she tracked down the person who told her the beverages were not going to the Republican meeting. So, no, they did not have a big beer party or something.
No kegger?
Having said that, they certainly did have the White House event, and it certainly did sound like I don't think it's unfair to characterize it as spiking the football. Yeah, guys, this is – look, on the one hand, considering how earlier this year you tried to pass it in the House and it didn't pass and you did manage to get together 217 votes, yes, you should – look, you know, take a bow. That is an accomplishment. Good for you, Paul Ryan. Good for you, Kevin McCarthy. A lot of – surprising amount of credit going to the White House, both Mike Pence and apparently Trump himself had a pretty good sense of who in the caucus was reachable and who was not reachable and managed to focus the last-minute cajoling and arm twisting. They deserve that. Having said that, there's another scenario that I find pretty darn plausible. You mentioned the Byrd rule earlier. Let's imagine a scenario in which something that Republicans think that is really important to this bill does not consider merely a budgetary issue and doesn't qualify under the Byrd rule. At some point, it comes to the Republicans need 60 votes in the Senate. Well, we all know there's not a single Senate Democrat who's going to vote to repeal and replace Obamacare.
Right.
So at some point it passes with a 50-50 vote, a 52 votes or something like that. But whatever happens, an insufficient number of votes are there to hit that 60-vote threshold to end the filibuster, cut off debate, and actually vote on the legislation. On the one hand, this would be an enormous defeat for Republicans. It would be enormously frustrating. I think you'd hear an enormously loud cry saying, we've got to get rid of the filibuster for legislature. It's impeding the Republican agenda. We ran on this. There's no way that 40 Democrats should be able to prevent us from doing all these things we promised to the American people. Or Republicans could go into the 2018 midterms and say, look, particularly as we've discussed in past episodes, how there's, problems with the individual market in Tennessee, problems with the individual market in Virginia, insurers are pulling out. The individual market is collapsing. Obamacare as a whole may not be, completely imploding, but there's certainly problems are getting worse. Premiums are going up. Copays are up. Deductibles are up. Republicans could go in the 2018 midterms and say, look, we tried. We just don't have enough votes in the Senate. Yes, we have a majority, but because of the filibuster, which we don't want to eliminate, we don't have 8 Democrats who are willing to play ball with us and who are willing to say, okay, we're willing to make certain changes to Obamacare. To fix this, we need more Republican votes in the Senate. In fact, this is kind of the message that came from Rick Scott at the NRA convention last week. He basically was saying, look, 52 Republican senators isn't really enough. If Republicans do well in the midterms in 2018, well, then maybe they have 55 or 57 or maybe even 60. I think that they probably have to sweep, run the table to get that. But if they did, well, then they can, enact any kind of change to Obamacare they want. Even if they don't, let's say they have 57, it's a lot easier to find three Democrats from red states who are terrified rather than eight of them, which is what they need right now. So there's a part of me that could see this, you know, a failure to enact an Obamacare reform and the idea that Democrats blocked this being a major issue in 2018. I think all things considered, though, Republicans and the Trump administration certainly would much rather get it passed than have to kick this off to the next Congress.
Yeah, absolutely. And even Kevin Brady, chairman of House Ways and Means, has admitted phase three, not going to happen in the current Senate. Best you can do is take the votes and leave it out there for voters in those states and hope that the map, which clearly favors Republicans, can get you closer to 60 like you were talking about. But Jim, breaking news. Jay Cutler is done playing football and ready to start talking football. Cutler, has joined Fox, where he will work as an analyst in a three-man booth with Kevin Burkhardt and Charles Davis, according to Fox sideline reporter Peter Schrager. So, Jim, when you throw in Tony Romo and Jay Cutler, you got a grand total of three playoff wins there. And for Jay Cutler, it's one, which is one less than Rex Grossman had.
I was going to say, I believe the record for road playoff wins is held by the great Mark Sanchez of the New York Jets, who managed to do that in two series. Now, we can argue how much Sanchez had a play in that, or had a hand in that, but he managed to not louse up four playoff victories. So those poor guys looking up at the great Sanchez, a little statue to him someday.
How much are those four playoff wins mitigated then by the butt fumble?
So the butt fumble is really visually exciting. I actually think that Sanchez, at least his early years, was a very underrated quarterback. Then one day, I believe it was a Sunday night game, and I think the Baltimore Ravens sacked him, I believe, 432 times in one game. And he was never quite the same after that. I think the fact, I'm fairly certain I saw limbs flying off of him during some of those sacks. So he was never quite the same after that. The Jets' decision to not play an offensive line that day was an unusual one. Rex Ryan really gambled with that. It was a bold move, Cotton. Let's see if it works out for him. It did not.
Hey, Rex Ryan, there's another guy in TV.
There we go.
Man. Yes. Yeah. Crazy.
Don't worry, NFL failures. There's always the studio booth waiting for you.
That's right. Jim, have a great weekend. Talk to you on Monday.
Good Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Monday for the next Three Martini Lunch. Have a great weekend, everyone.